Black, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into football season around here and all things Vegas and Chiefs and injuries and all that. All of our Wise conversations brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets, and this certainly stacks up to be one of those. I'll extend, you know, platitudes and, you know, great wishes to Ross Greenberg. You know what a huge fan I am of your work. And when you're doing something that's this significant, 9/11, baseball, it's always a pleasure to have you. It's always a Wise conversation with you, Ross Greenberg. How are you?
I'm doing really well, Nestor. It's great to be with you again. This was a special one and very close to my heart, this one.
Well, I lived through that, but you know, anyone our age lived through that. I was on one of those flights 2 weeks earlier from Newark out to LA. I was when I was nationally syndicated. I was not in New York the day it happened, but I was on live radio the day it happened. Give me just your personal thing. I mean, you're working for HBO back then, right?
Yeah, I was working for HBO. My mom was dying, actually, and I was in Houston, Texas, and she passed away on September the 9th. So I found myself the morning of her funeral, getting ready to do her eulogy in her apartment. And all of a sudden, the housekeeper, you know, said you should turn on the TV. And all of a sudden, there it was. And so, you know, within an hour, I was out the door going to her funeral and ended up having to take a Greyhound bus from Houston, Texas, number of buses. From Houston, Texas, back up to New York to reunite with my family in Larchmont. And yes, I was then president of HBO Sports. So I had to make my way through the grieving process with my mom and also the harrowing experience of living in New York and working in New York City right after 9/11. It was scary, man. And I think that's one of the things we wanted to do with this documentary, myself and Joe Levine, my co-producer, director. We wanted to kind of take you back in time and visually and orally give you an understanding of what the fear was like in New York and what the feeling was like, you know, whether it's the compassion for firefighters and policemen or just the fear of another bomb dropping or everything that was going on in the city, which was pretty harrowing at the time. So, yeah, it was a tough personal journey for me. Just to wrap up that personal journey, a month later, I found myself at Game 3 of the World Series at Yankee Stadium. And I was there when Bush threw out that first pitch and listening to the USA chants and the thunderous guttural feelings that were coming out of the stands. And I realized I was living a documentary. I wasn't just watching a baseball game. I knew this was much, much bigger than baseball. And that's when the seed of the idea for a docu started. And that, you know, then was preceded by a docu we did at HBO called Nine Innings from Ground Zero. But then I got a call from Sandy Montag, one of the great entrepreneurial agents and television executives of our time. And he asked me if I wanted to produce and direct this 20 years later. And I was more than happy to get involved. I re-enlisted Joe Levine, who would help me through the HBO doc. And we set out to make this documentary.
Well, it's had a profound impact on my life. My wife was a first responder, 9/11, before I knew her. I met her about a year and a half later. She would always point to the hole in the ground and say, I came here and helped put that back together, because she works at telecom and is an engineer and, you know, was the first trying to get Wall Street back up. And then she gets cancer all these years later. And the circle of the Zagroba Fund and all of the fallout that's happened there, that's impacted me in a way that we didn't realize this till a couple of years ago. So many people, but I was at that game with you, Game 3. I was there when Bush threw out I was syndicated then and working at Mickey Mantle's in Midtown and wondering what was going on 50 blocks away, right? Or 60 blocks away at that point in time. I was around sports, right? And sports shut down. And other than the plague last year, in our lifetime, we both were connected through sports. Sports never shuts down, right? I mean, Kennedy, we heard, sports never shuts down. The shutdown of sports, the shutdown of the country. I remember being at a Journey concert in York, Pennsylvania on like the 12th or the 13th. And the only reason they did the concert was because they couldn't leave, because planes weren't flying and there were no planes in the air. All of the fear for America and the antithesis of where we are together in a division, right? I mean, it felt like we sort of came together to take care of each other in New York and Pennsylvania, DC, everything that had happened. But my entree was always sports, right? So I was around the Yankees a lot then. I was around the players in the World Series at that point trying to put that together. But also Jim Fossil later in life became a friend of mine, you know, coaching here and all that football represented when they came back and saw the fires, all of that. Sports was a real tying, unifying piece through New York on having been there during that period. And you were there. People looked at sports for some leadership in some way then.
Yeah, it's really about the fact, I figured this out while doing this documentary. Sports enabled 60,000 people to gather at a stadium, right? And so, and also millions watching on television. So it's a very communal enterprise, an entertainment vehicle. And so it, as a backdrop, it then can be utilized by the president of the United States in throwing out a first pitch to kind of signal the American public, hey, I'm not afraid to walk out to this mound and throw a pitch. So don't you be afraid. And we're going to get through this together as a country. And then you had all those magical moments where 60,000 people could cheer in unison. You had all the USA chants popping up all over the country at stadiums around the country. And those were coming through on television for those that were watching at home. So it became a backdrop for a unifying force for the country. And as Ari Fleischer says in the documentary, I didn't vote for Bush, but when Bush took the mound, it wasn't a Republican or Democrat taking the mound. It was the president of the United States and the chants of USA were recognizing him as our leader to help us get through it. So the unification that we had then, you'll see the stark contrast to what we're dealing with now as we try to get our way out of this horrible pandemic. And there's this non-unity, this division in this country over whether you should wear a mask or get vaccinated, which is bizarre to me, you know, because maybe this kind of a document, looking back at history, people can learn something that everyone should be wearing masks. Everyone should be getting immunized. This is ridiculous. You know, we're a country that needs to climb out of this mess we're in. So maybe that's one of the messages this historic lesson can teach us.
I promise you, if you're hearing the voice of Ross Greenberg, you have seen his work, whether it was Hard Knocks 20 years ago. We're celebrating some anniversaries on that. He's won more awards for sports production than just about anybody. He is the GOAT. He's producing this Extra Innings from 9/11 20 years later. It's a feature-length doc. It's on HBO Max. He's making my wife and I watch it this weekend. We're probably going to cry. You're going to make me cry, Greenberg. Nobody makes me cry the way you make me cry.
Yeah.
Hold on, man. I got the Kleenex. I brought the Kleenex.
Get them in place when you watch this doc. Because we take some heart-wrenching stories of people that lost loved ones who were attached to baseball in some way. And we either update them in the case of Brielle Saraceni, whose dad was one of the pilots of the planes that flew into one of the towers, or, you know, a family, Jimmy Quinn and his brothers who Jimmy passed away on the 105th floor or whatever, working for Cantor Fitzgerald. And his brothers to this day yearly take a group of 20 or so to Shea Stadium, now Citi Field, in order to honor their brother. So, I mean, it's a heart-wrenching story.
You're going to make me cry now.
I mean, I always get choked up when I start thinking about the Tino Martinez home run in Game 4 and then the Scott Brosius home run back-to-back the next night.
Well, that makes you a Yankee fan is what that does. Yeah, that brings tears to your eye. That makes me cry.
Well, also, I get choked up on the Piazza's home run, too. I'm also, you know, but because they signified New York. It wasn't... You know, they were America's team, both of them at that point, because they were wearing New York across their chest. And everyone was rooting for all New Yorkers to get through it.
Ross, you know, have you ever done anything that wasn't sports? I mean, it seems like a flippant question, but I'm thinking.
Funny.
You know what I mean? Like I'm saying, like what, when these stories happen, sports becomes some of the glue, you know? And I guess that's right. Sports guys get interested in stuff when there's a sports angle to some degree, but you don't really tell sports stories. You tell human stuff. I mean,
right.
But you just choose mostly to use sports as a vehicle for all this.
Yeah. It's almost like sports is what is injected into my veins in order to tell these kinds of stories. So, you know, I was a strange kid. I would watch sporting events and I would always take it as an out-of-body experience. And I put myself in the mind of the athlete who was winning a championship, you know, whether it's Joe Willie Namath in 68, or I remember Bill Toomey crossing the finish line, winning the decathlon, and Jim McKay giving those unbelievable words in Mexico City. And I was getting teary-eyed watching him, knowing that he had put a lifetime of work into that moment. And so I was that kind of kid. So sports always struck me as a vehicle of showing human emotion and all of it. And that's where I get it from. I probably get it from ABC Sports and Rune Arledge and the way that they attack sports. And then
they presented it as a dramatic reading. Right. They presented it as almost Shakespeare about to happen, right?
Right. And as you watch this film, I think you'll draw on that. You'll understand that sports is the backdrop to tell these stories about this horrific event, and draw on the emotion of it. And, you know, magical moments in sports can be something really special that live on a lifetime that you'll never forget. The way you'll never forget 9/11, you'll never forget Piazza's home run or those series of home runs in that World Series in 2001. So the people that, you know, suffered the most, had their parents or loved ones pass, they use sports to put a smile back on their face and to realize that life is worth living, that you can move on from these tragedies. You never forget, but you move on from these tragedies. And we all lose loved ones in life. That was a quote from Muhammad Ali after he lost his Leon Spinks in the first fight. He was in a locker room and he said, "We're all going to lose it in life. We're going to lose our mothers, our fathers, but the true champions are the ones that get through it and pick themselves back up and win again." And that, you know, he was amazing. And that quote really sums up the feeling that you want to project after doing this doc.
Well, leadership at the heart of this, right? Whether it's Torrey and Valentine then, and I know Rudy Giuliani's gone through several metamorphoses since then over 20 years, but the leadership that's shown in those moments, and I would say during COVID, we all looked at governors, mayors, leadership,
right.
Business
right.
Leaders, wherever it is. But Torrey, and I talked about Jim Fossil a little bit, those were the people with the podium the day after to say, we're not going to cower up. We're not going to, in addition to George Bush, but down the line for sports, there's something about leadership that goes hand in hand with people looking to sports.
And Torrey and Valentine, because Sandy Montag, when he called me and said, "Do you want to do this?" He said, "Look, I've got Joe Torrey and Bobby Valentine attached as executive producers as well." So I talked to Joe Levine and the idea was to put them center and front and center and have them as our guides through the entire story. So we did very long interviews with each. And then we also had them open and close it from the monument that's erected at Ground Zero today. And they were just wonderful to work with. I've known them for years anyway. But, you know, with all the old clips that we compiled, you saw their leadership come through.
I remember their leadership.
You
know what I mean? Literally, when I saw their name, I didn't know you built the whole thing around them, but that we're thinking alike here because literally all I can remember, I don't remember what Bernie Williams, I mean, I maybe remember a home run, or remember a sports clip, but when I'm talking about things that were said and moved people in a direction of, "I'm not going to hide in my basement," right? Those were the voices. They really were.
Yeah. And they're the voices of the doc. And you'll see it come through loud and clear. It was Bobby Valentine that was in the parking lot pulling all those goods out of those trucks and getting them to people that were doing relief, like your wife in at Ground Zero. And it was Joe Torrey talking to that team after they had beaten the Mariners in five, and we're on to the World Series, and saying, you did this for New York. And, you know, you could see, and he knew the cameras were on him, and you could see that he was mounting a different kind of leadership that he had previously as a baseball manager. So you're right. They were front and center then, and I made them front and center now.
Well, it's been 20 years, and it, look, we're not in New York. It doesn't come back to me. And when it comes back every year, I find it to be a little macabre. You know what I mean? That every year there's some, I don't want to say celebration, but some sort of demarcation that takes you back to a very dark time. And just as I'm talking to you, I'm thinking about the FDY hats, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, the hats they wore in the dugout. That was... It's been a while since I've seen that image, but that's an image I think we need to see again.
Well, you're going to see plenty of it, because we tell the in-depth story of how that came to be. That just didn't happen out of the blue. I don't even want to give away the story.
Oh, please, give it away. Make them watch.
You want it? Yeah, I'll make them watch. So we did tell that story of how that came to be, and there was a little bit of a rough moment in them wearing those hats. Major League Baseball was not... you know, infatuated with allowing them to wear those hats. I'll leave it at that. But
come on, be a little more pliable. We've got a tragedy here, Bud. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Know? So that's what happened. And lo and behold, it became a very important signature for the event and for the team rallying around baseball to make things change. And, you know, the one message, Nestor, that's really important in this film, yes, you're going to cry, but it's not a terrible cry, because what it does is it just kind of shows your love affair with getting back from tragedy and getting away from the horrors of what happened and sending a message of hope. You know, hope is probably the biggest takeaway I hope people will get from this film, rather than just brooding in the 20 years of sadness. You know, yes, it's a very sad moment, but there is hope that you can still live your life. And that's the message we wanted to deliver.
Ross Greenberg is here. You have seen his work on HBO, former president there, but also lots of boxing, lots of documentaries, lots of Hard Knocks. I said to my wife today, I was trying to think of all the things you had been involved in because of her connection through 9/11 and your connection through 9/11. And I started to say, I think he did 61. We used to show that on the book. And I went through all these other things. At this point, and I don't want to do a This Is Your Life, Ross Greenberg, but if there's one thing, because I haven't seen all of your work, I've seen some of it misses me, some of it's in a genre or a sport that I don't care about or a story that I look at and say, yeah, you know, give me something you've done that I may have not have seen that's your proudest work, or I don't want to say pick amongst your children, right? I don't want you to pick your favorite song, but give me something that's off the beaten path that you think is your finest. I'll give you an example. I've seen the 30 for 30s on ESPN. I tell everyone they need to go see the Colombian soccer one. Like, that's the one I thought, wow, that you probably don't know that story. But the two Escobars, I think. Give me your favorite doc of yours.
The two pieces that I think will live on forever are probably the two features I did, which is 61, which you mentioned, the story of Manolin Maris in 1961, which I did with Billy Crystal, pulled him into it, and we're really proud of how that turned out. And also Miracle.
You did with Tiger Stadium. That's all I can say. Amazing.
That was at Tiger Stadium. And we had some Baltimore Orioles in there, remember? Hoyt Wilhelm. Because he almost hit his 61st in Baltimore, I'll remind you. But the fact is that and Miracle will stand the test of time, the movie Miracle. And Do You Believe in Miracles, which was the documentary that spawned the movie Miracle. Those two were very important and I'll hold near and dear. Now, one film that we ended up making three films, but the first, When It Was a Game, which we did in 1990, which there are probably a lot of people watching who are going, what was When It Was a Game? It was the story of baseball from the 30s through the 60s in living color that we had compiled from people's attics, a bunch of color footage of baseball in its earliest days. And we tried to give people a feeling of what baseball was back then. But you were able to see all these, you know, Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and everyone in color. And it just brought the sport alive instead of always seeing that in black and white. And we did a really long, painstaking effort to really give you an idea of how the game was played and what was done on the field during those days, whether it's, you know, the spikes in the air as you hit second base or leaving your gloves on the field in between innings, you know, and you march out to shortstop and pick up your glove that was lying on the field. Just strange things about the game. But also
kind of like guys standing on second base in the 10th inning and 7-inning games. Not that strange.
That didn't exist. No, not that strange. But it really, it changed the way we did sports films. It changed the way I, you know, did sports films. So it was a very important one. But, you know, Magic and Bird was really important documentary that we did. You know, there were some that rose to a level. And actually, Saturdays is in the top five.
Well, I was going to say, maybe you haven't done your best one yet. Maybe.
No, I always have to feel like I haven't. And this one, I sat with my family and watched the final cut. And it's pretty darn good, as Larry David would say.
Greenberg always getting better at making me cry, man. Ross Greenberg here from HBO. You know, keep up the great work. Keep doing what
Thanks,
you're doing.
Man.
I always appreciate the visits. And whenever you have something to come on and crow about, please come on and crow about it. And
I will.
And next time we get together, we'll have a crab cake, maybe a beverage, and talk about fixing baseball.
You got it. You got it.
Ross Greenberg joining us here. Make sure you're checking it out. It's on HBO Max. All things 9/11 and certainly the baseball angle on this. You can find all that out there. You can find Ross out on the internet as well. And find all of his other works because I'm sure you haven't seen them all, kind of like me. So Ross Greenberg, give us a little bit of homework. A big appreciation to our friends at Royal Farms, Real Fresh, Real Fast, for sending us out there on Chicken Palooza and the Crab Cake Tour. The Crab Cake Tour continues Friday at Costas in Dundalk with Johnny O. We're going to have some other visitors in my neck of the woods, all of it presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.